The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. And if you'd like to skip the intro or move to any specific part of the podcast, please refer to the timestamps listed in the episode description. Thank you. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. And Peep is right here in my lap. She's being a little moody, so we'll see how it goes with her. It is August 22nd, 2024 right now, 7:14 p.m. It's a little cloudy here in New York. It's getting a little cooler, like the fall we were talking about last episode, I think. But it's definitely going to get hotter again. As I was saying, I'm going to the fair this weekend on Saturday, and it's like the one thing getting me through this shitty week. I'm like, I get to go to the fun fair and have good snacks and have drinks and walk around and look at like corny things like airbrush t-shirts and leather belts with crazy designs on them. It's very country, I guess you could say. It's fun though.
The weather here is next level amazing. Like, we have a few days coming up next week in the 80s, and it's still winter here, like 80s, so it's like late 20s Celsius. So still winter, but it's so, so, so nice. Like, I'm looking out the window now, there isn't a cloud in the sky. It's blue. It's kind of still crisp in the mornings, but warm, even because the kids here at schools wear uniforms. So we got an email saying that the kids can wear their summer uniforms from now on, which is early because it's going to be so hot. So it's very exciting.
Nice. I feel like this is when the seasons change, our weather gets the closest it'll ever be to being similar.
Yeah, true.
Otherwise, actually, we're just opposites. I've been having like the worst week. I feel like I say this all the time, and I'm always like, you can't always be like, oh my God, I'm having such a hard time. I'm having the worst week. Because
it's just life now.
Remember that? I know. But remember that one review we got forever ago? And it was like, it's so sad and pathetic hearing Stephanie just talk about like how she doesn't do anything and has like
unfulfilling
life with her cats. Yeah, unfulfilling life with her cats. And Olivia has such a fulfilling life traveling with her children and all this. I always think about that when I'm like, ugh. You know what? My life is so fulfilling. I'm married now and I have a house, because that was part. It was like, she's not married.
You've got a worth now.
Yeah. But at what cost? Because it's like my sanity. No, but not end of the world. How I'm always just like, everything's horrible. Just this week, too many people at my job were approved to like go on vacation. So it's been crazy because it's been busy and we have like five people working, I feel like. So just been like a nightmare of a week. But I saved this topic specifically to talk about on the podcast because I think more people clearly need to be aware of this etiquette. I don't even know if it's etiquette or if it's something I made up in my head, but it pisses me off all the time. So I'm assuming it's like the same in Australia with gas prices. They're always like going up and down. So there's one near my job that's significantly lower than all the other ones for some reason. And of course, the setup there of pulling in and it being small and there being pumps just like not conveniently placed, it's a nightmare. It is not, there's not a lot of space. So if you want to wait in line, you can hardly even wait in line. And if you do, you're like blocking other people from getting out because it's almost like a tiny triangle shaped. And then all the pumps are just in one straight line and there's three on each side. So like the middle one gets really tight if there's two cars on the outside ones. Not to like get into logistics, but it's just a very annoying setup. So you have to time it like just right when there's not really anyone there and you could swoop right in. So anyways, I pulled in and I was like waiting. And I was just waiting for one car to really move out of the way when, so it would have been easier for me to maneuver around. And this person, they're like done pumping their gas. I saw they're like putting it in, close the little thing. And I was like, oh, perfect. And you know what they fucking do? They go inside to the shop, to the gas station shop. I'm like, how are you going to leave your car at this very busy gas station that only has six pumps that people are waiting in line for? And you're going to go in there and shop? And like buy stuff, like move your car to a fucking parking space. Hello. And I feel like people do this all the time. And I get it. when it's not busy and there's a ton of pumps and they're open, I'll leave my car at the pump and go inside. But I feel like in this situation, it's so rude and it makes me so mad when it's a busy gas station and people are literally waiting to pump gas for other people to leave. And you're going to go inside and leave your car there.
I always feel, because I feel like the process here is different. So here, you, like most places, some places do have pay at the pump or you can pay on an app or something, but mostly you fill up your car, then you go in and pay. So like I always feel bad when I fill up my car and then I still have to go in and pay and there's like a line of cars waiting. I'm like, okay, I'll be quick. I have to go and pay.
So you can't pay with your card?
No. Like, and when I say no, some places you can, and I feel like, but for some reason they've even gotten rid of that everywhere and now you can pay via an app, like if you have the app. But then, because I use a card, like it's called a fleet card, which is basically where my work pays for my petrol, my fuel, so I to use that I have to go in to pay. Like I actually have no choice. So I don't want to say no places have pay at the pump, but very few around here do anyway. Unless you've got the app, you've generally got to go in. So, I get it.
Here, I mean, pretty much always, like, you pay beforehand. Even if you pay cash now, they, like, want you to go and pay cash first, and they set the pump to, like, that amount. But here, pretty much everywhere, you just pay on your card at the pump. Like, you just put it in, and then you hit the prompts on the screen, and it just does it. But, yeah, I literally was waiting, and the person, like, came out with, like, a drink and a snack and whatever, because I ended up moving somewhere else, so I was still pumping gas by the time they came out. And then they, like, leisurely get into their car. They're talking on the phone, like, on speakerphone, get in their car slowly. I'm like, oh, my God. Some people have absolutely no self-awareness. It makes me so mad. So if you're one of those people, grow up.
I do hate that though. Like if I'm waiting in line and then someone gets in the car and they open their drink and then they open their food, and then I'm like, come on, just do this, get moving, do this. Everyone's waiting for you.
Especially if it's something like a gas station or something like that. I understand, because sometimes if I go somewhere on my break, like Walmart or something, and then I get in my car and I still have more time on my break, and I'll dilly dally in the car for a little because I don't have like cell phone service really at my job. It's kind of like a black hole spot. So I'll be like, oh, I'll just like look on my phone here in the Walmart parking lot, or I'll be playing Pokemon Go in the Walmart parking lot because like Walmart is popping for Pokemon. But then you get someone who's like waiting for your spot, and I'm like, I'm not moving. You can find another spot. There are many spots, especially if your spot's not even that great. I'm like, move along, please, because I'm not moving right now. So yeah, that is my, I don't know, public service announcement, trying to remind everyone to please
be more self-aware.
Be self-aware. Because some people are having a bad day and just want to get gas and not be inconvenienced by one more thing.
And I feel like, too, getting gas is, like, one of the worst jobs. I hate doing it. I'm like, I try and time it so it, like, takes up the least amount of time in my day. And if it gets delayed, like, you know, if I'm delayed because it's busy, it pisses me off. So, no, like, who likes getting gas? Not one person can surely like it. It's a job. Let's just make everyone's lives easier. In and out, that's it.
And the pumps at this gas station and just other gas stations, when the pump, some of them are so slow. It's so annoying. I'm like, I could be standing out here forever. And it's just going up so slow. But you're, I was going to say, lucky. I know it gets like a little cold in Australia when you have to pump gas. Here, if you have to pump gas in the winter when it's like windy and the wind chill is like in the negative degrees, it's the fucking worst. Oh, it's so miserable. That's the only time I'm jealous of, for some reason, in New Jersey. I'm sure other states, you're not allowed to pump your own gas and people have to pump it for you that work there. I was like, that's the only time I'm jealous of them. But then I feel bad for the people too. So yeah. Pumping gas in the winter is the worst. So yeah, that is what I saved up to talk about on this podcast episode that I literally wrote down as a note on my phone of like things I can talk about. Gas stations.
Before we get into the episode, this message is sponsored by Greenlight. I know you guys are at the new school year there. Personally, I can't believe that I have one child in high school, one child almost in the last year of primary school. It's crazy. Time goes so fast. If you're a parent, you want to make this new school year an opportunity for your kids to learn important life skills and continue building independence. And for that, we recommend Greenlight. So Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, and parents can keep an eye on kids' new money habits. There's even a chores feature that lets you reward your kids for honoring their responsibilities around their house, and you could help your kids get into their routine more easily than ever.
There's also Greenlight's Infinity Plan, which includes the same access to financial literacy education that makes Greenlight a valuable resource for millions of parents and kids, plus built-in safety to give you peace of mind. With Greenlight Infinity, teens can check in without needing to actually check in. Thanks to family location sharing, they can also call for help if they need it with SOS alerts that connect them to family members, 911, or both. There's even a feature that can detect car crashes and will connect your young drivers to 911 dispatch and alert emergency contacts if needed. I actually have something like that on my phone, and I love knowing that I have that. It just gives you like a little bit more security in your everyday life.
Peace of mind.
So sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/TCS. That's greenlight.com/TCS to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/TCS. All right, today we are going to be talking about Matthew Perry. As you guys know, he was a very famous celebrity. He was very well known from his time on the show Friends, and he ended up overdosing on ketamine in October 2023, but there was just 5 people arrested that are related to his death, his overdose death, and it's caused a lot of controversy and conversation online. It's a pretty interesting case, actually. I didn't really think much would come of it because we've heard that they were investigating it for months now, and I don't know. I feel like this has happened with celebrities before. They arrest someone and you kind of just like never really hear about it again. But this turned out to be multiple arrests, doctors involved. It seemed like a pretty big takedown, I guess you could say. So we're going to get into all of the information that's come out about that. I don't know if any other information is going to come out after we record this because it does seem like some stuff's still coming out. So if anything else comes along before this episode comes out, try to add in a clip if it's significant enough. But just keep in mind, we're recording this on August 22nd.
Stunning developments in the death of Matthew Perry. Law enforcement today announced the arrests of 2 doctors and 3 others in connection with the actor's fatal overdose.
The arrests come 10 months after Perry drowned in his hot tub and followed dogged investigations by the DEA, U.S. Postal Service, and LAPD.
Those under arrest include Perry's live-in assistant, Kenneth Iwamasa, seen leaving Perry's house 2 weeks after his death.
This network included a live-in assistant, various go-betweens, 2 medical doctors, and a major source of drug supply known as, quote, the ketamine queen.
The so-called ketamine queen is identified by prosecutors as alleged drug trafficker Jasveen Sangha. News helicopters flew over her alleged stash house in North Hollywood, where agents say they confiscated these drugs.
The ketamine supplied by Sangha would ultimately be the dose that took Matthew Perry's life. Sangha knew that the ketamine she supplied could be deadly.
Also named in the indictment, Dr. Salvador Placencia, who investigators say helped distribute 20 vials of ketamine to Perry for $55,000.
Defendant Placencia saw this as an opportunity to profit off of Mr. Perry. He wrote in a text message in September 2023, quote, "I wonder how much this moron will pay." He also stated in text messages that he wanted to be Mr. Perry's sole source of supply.
Prosecutors say the doctor knew his actions were dangerous.
In fact, on one occasion, he injected Mr. Perry with ketamine, and he saw Mr. Perry freeze up and his blood pressure spike.
Also arrested, Dr. Mark Chavez, a medical director at a company specializing in regenerative medicine.
So a little bit more about him, if you're not familiar with him. Matthew Perry, like I said, a lot of people know him from the show Friends. Did you ever watch Friends? I didn't.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, I wasn't like a massive super fan, but I've watched plenty of episodes. Yeah.
I think about getting into it sometimes and I'm like, it seems like such a massive endeavor now. But I remember when I was
so
younger.
Seasons.
Yeah. My parents definitely watched it. So I was like familiar with it, but I've never actually sat down and watched it. So I'm sure people are going to be like, you need to go watch it. I'll get around to it. It's on my list of things to do. Matthew had a public and documented battle with addiction. A lot of people knew about it. He was very open about it. He wrote a book in 2022 called Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing, where he went more in depth about his struggles.
I actually read the book. It was one of our book club books.
I heard it was good.
Yeah, like it was interesting, but I feel like it was very poorly written. But I just feel like also there were some things where he seemed like a bit of a jerk. Like he made fun of Keanu Reeves in the book, and he came out later and kind of apologized for that.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. But like it was interesting, especially learning about how much he used to drink and like the amount of drugs that he did. He didn't spare any detail. He was very, very open about it in the book. Like it's an interesting read. When I say it's an easy read, it's quite quick. Like, it's obviously about a lot of difficult topics, but it was very interesting. Like he definitely had an interesting life.
Yeah. I think that was what I meant by good. Like people were like, oh, it's crazy learning all this stuff about his drug use and all that. But yeah, I didn't see anybody being like, wow, literary masterpiece. So a bit about his background. He was born in Williamstown, Massachusetts. His mother is Suzanne Langford, a Canadian journalist, and his father was John Bennett Perry, who is an American actor. His parents had split up, and he mainly grew up in Canada with his mother. And as he grew up, he got into tennis and became a top-ranking junior tennis player. He would practice for up to 10 hours a day. When he was 15, he decided to reunite with his father and decided that he wanted to be an actor. He told the New York Times, I wanted to be famous so badly. You want the attention, you want the bucks, and you want the best seat in the restaurant. 1997, when he was 28 years old, he checked into a rehab facility for a month after he became hooked on painkillers and appetite suppressants. He lost 35 pounds before he checked in. 3 years after that, he was hospitalized with pancreatitis.
It's quite interesting in his book because over the years on Friends, his weight fluctuated a lot. And I only bring that up because he said you could tell basically when he was on alcohol, when he was an alcoholic, he was bigger. And when he was on the pain pills, he lost a lot of weight. So he said basically most of the time that he was filming Friends, he was high or wasted or, you know, whatever. So it's interesting to kind of note that, and you notice it when you watch the different seasons.
See, I feel like now if I do ever watch it, I'm just going to think about that a lot.
Mm.
So in 2001, while filming the movie Serving Sarah, he had to leave the set to go to rehab again. In 2013, he converted his home in Malibu into a drug and alcohol rehab center named Perry House, but he closed it down 2 years later and said it was too expensive to run. In 2018, at the age of 49, he estimated that he had spent half his life getting treatment for his addictions. He also said that he thought he had spent around $9 million on rehab. That year, he got pneumonia and had an exploded colon, which was caused by drug use. It sounds horrible. He was placed on life support and spent 2 weeks in a coma. Jeez. I never knew that about him.
Yeah, he managed to keep it quite quiet for a celebrity. Like, I feel like most people didn't realize that this happened until he wrote about it in the book.
Yeah. In 2021, Friends, The Reunion was released, and by then, Matthew had been sober for 21 months. He had many high-profile relationships with women, including Minnie Driver, Julia Roberts. He was engaged from 2020 to 2021 to Molly Hurwitz, but they never ended up getting married.
That was one thing I did find sad in the book was he basically – all he wanted really was a family. He wanted someone to love, and it seems like he wanted kids, and he just was never able to, I guess – move past his addictions to be able to get that, which is sad because he did die quite young in the end too. But yeah, that's one sad part of his life. And even though he seemed to have it all, he had, you know, the mansions, the millions of dollars, what he had, everything he wanted except for someone to love.
Yeah, it seems like his entire life was basically either being addicted to drugs and alcohol or trying to recover from being addicted to drugs and alcohol, which is sad. Didn't he also say, I don't know if I'm making this up, that he had like a crush on Jennifer Aniston for a long time for the show, or like he was in love with her or something?
Yeah, certainly. I can't remember exactly, but yeah, basically along those lines, yeah.
Mm. So in terms of his death, the doctors Salvador Plasencia and Mark Chavez were arrested, and then the alleged drug dealer, who is a woman named Jasvine Sanga, who's known as apparently the ketamine queen. I'm like, who's calling her this though? Does she call herself this? I don't know. That's what the tabloids are saying, or the news.
They call the ketamine queen of Los Angeles.
Yeah. His friend, Eric Fleming, and his live-in assistant, Kenneth Iwamasa, they have all been charged in relation to his death, all like between the ages of 40 to late 50s, just for reference. So a little bit of background on the criminals. Kenneth, who is the assistant, he had been working for Matthew for more than 25 years. And I'd say he's part of kind of the controversy to this, because some people are arguing, should he have been arrested? Like, what if Matthew Perry just told him what to do and he was just doing his job? And other people are like, well, I mean, I could have said no. Like, if my boss told me to go buy a shit ton of ketamine, I'd be like, no. So that's one of the debates going on. So he worked as a talent manager for other celebrities over the years, such as Angela Bassett. And one of his online bios read, I thrive in chaotic situations which call for order. I'm discreet, loyal, and honor absolute confidentiality. Some reports say that Kenneth had been living with Matthew for months prior to October 2023. Then Salvador Plasencia, he was one of the doctors. He graduated from medical school at the University of California, Los Angeles in 2010 and has not been subject to any disciplinary actions. And his medical license was due to expire in October 2024. He's known to his patients as Dr. P, and he ran the Malibu Canyon Urgent Care Center before he was arrested. A woman who works with him said, I've worked with him for years. He's a good doctor. I don't know the whole story. I'm not involved with this, but as a person, I know him, and I know that he's a really good person. Mark Chavez, who was a psychiatrist in San Diego, his medical license is in good standing with no disciplinary actions, and it was due to expire in 2026. Mark also graduated from UCLA Medical School in 2004 and completed his residency at Stony Brook University Hospital on Long Island in New York. Until July 2023, Mark had been associated with Dreamscape Ketamine and Wellness, which is a clinic in San Diego that offered 1 or 2 hour ketamine treatments at the price of up to $800. Mark also has an online business called The Health MD, and he described the business as focusing on health, wellness, and longevity. Vague. So these are two doctors. So Salvatore described Mark as being a mentor to him for 15 years, saying the psychiatrist helped him on his path to becoming a medical entrepreneur. Eric Fleming, who is the friend, is an American film and television director and producer. He's a graduate of USC School of Cinematic Arts and is known for creating the 1992 experimental short film, The Silver Surfer, which portrayed the Marvel comic character through CGI. And he was friends with Matthew. So now to the ketamine queen herself, Jasveen Sangha. She has a home in North Hollywood, which is now referred to as the Sangha Stash House. This is being very tabloidized, yeah. I guess is the word, like, since it's celebrity.
Sensationalist. So
there's a lot of that, yeah. She allegedly used the property to store, package, and distribute narcotics. She was arrested previously in March 2024 for an unrelated federal drug case. She was accused of being a large volume drug dealer at the time, and she was released after she posted a $100,000 bond. In 2019, a man named Cody McLaury, who purchased ketamine from Jasveen, overdosed and died within a day of the drug deal. A family member of the man contacted Jasveen and told her about the death. The family member wrote, "The ketamine you sold my brother killed him. It's listed as the cause of death." Days after that, she was Googling, "Can ketamine be listed as a cause of death?" After Matthew's death, a drug distribution charge was filed in relation to that case, but it hasn't been specified who was charged. Jasveen was active on social media prior to her recent arrest, and she often posted pics of herself vacationing. She seemed very into herself. She had 11,000 followers on Instagram. Her bio says she has like London, LA with the little pin, curator, arts, this is her bio, arts, events, music, Holt Business School, and has her bachelor's degree, 2005, Calabasas High. Imagine putting your high school in your Instagram bio. Calabasas High 01. It's definitely just because Calabasas. And she has the quote, "The eyes are useless when the mind is blind." Deep, girl. In her most recent Instagram post, she shared a meme which showed a sitcom clip of British actor Patsy Stone telling a customer that they couldn't afford a bag because they asked about the price. In the caption of the video, she wrote, "POV shopping at Hermes." She then added, "I want to be her for Halloween so bad." She captioned the video, "Cancel my aromatherapy, my psychotherapy, my reflexology, my osteopath, my homeopath, my naturopath, my crystal reading, my shiatsu, my organic hairdresser and see if I can be rebirthed next Thursday afternoon. And then like dash signed absolutely fabulous XX. What?
Because Absolutely Fabulous is the show. I don't know if you guys know it, but so Patsy Stone, it was like this show about these two women who kind of lived a high life and boozed up, and they were all, you know, funny. So that's she, and obviously Jasmine has some type of British background if she was from London or whatever. So yeah, Absolutely Fabulous is the show, and Patsy Stone is the person who she posted the meme of, and that's a character in the show.
I have like a weird deja vu right now where I swear we've talked about Absolutely Fabulous before, because I don't know what it is and you've had to explain it to me before, but I have no idea like what other case or that would be in reference to.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It could have just been like weird deja vu. So online, Jasmine was listed as the chief financial officer of the now closed Studio City salon called the Stiletto Nail Bar. So she just seems all around kind of like a scammer to me.
Yeah.
On Saturday, September 30th, 2023, Matthew and his assistant Kenneth met with Dr. Salvador Placencia at Matthew's home in the Pacific Palisades area of LA. Matthew had been getting ketamine treatments for depression from his regular doctor, but he met with Salvador in an effort to get more of the drug because he was not able to get enough legally through his doctor. Because I'm sure his real doctor knows he's an addict and they do pay attention to those things and controlled substances and all that. So if you don't know about what ketamine is exactly, it's a dissociative anesthetic used medically for induction and maintenance of anesthesia. It's also used as treatment for depression and pain management. Seems like it's becoming more popular as a treatment for depression. Like people go to clinics now if you microdose it, I guess. But it's still under supervision of a doctor. So after the meeting, Salvador texted Dr. Mark Chavez, who agreed to get the ketamine. Salvador texted Mark and said, "I wonder how much this moron will pay." Rude.
Mm.
The two doctors met up in Costa Mesa, halfway between LA and San Diego, later that day and exchanged at least 4 vials of ketamine. Salvador went back to Matthew's house, where Kenneth paid him $4,500 cash for the vials. Salvador gave Matthew 2 injections of ketamine and showed Kenneth how to inject him. Salvador texted Mark and said that the whole scenario, quote, felt like a bad movie. How that would come back to haunt them. On Monday, October 2nd, Kenneth texted Salvador saying that he wanted to buy not just injection sessions, but wanted to be left with more vials of ketamine. They referred to it in text via an agreed-upon code of the word Dr. Pepper. So they're trying to be discreet. And like, what are they saying? Like, I need higher gauge needles for the Dr. Pepper.
So ridiculous.
So yeah, for such educated people. Some texts on this day between them came out, and like one says, "For 8 treatments, we can just make it an even 25K, and I'll bring needles of higher gauge." So much money. Salvador went to the home, injected Matthew, and left behind vials of ketamine. On Wednesday, October 4th, Kenneth, just as a reminder, Kenneth is the assistant, texted Dr. Salvador. He said that he had injected Matthew himself for the first time and that he had found the sweet spot. He said that they tried different spots to inject on Matthew and that led to them running out of ketamine. He asked the doctor for more. He said in a text, "I will need to get more cans of Dr. Pepper from you today. I can come to you to make it convenient." Salvador texted Dr. Mark on this day and asked if he could keep supplying the drugs so they could become Matthew's go-to. So it seemed kind of like Salvador was the middleman in a way, and then Mark was the one who's actually prescribing it. On Friday, October 6th, Kenneth asked, this is so much money, so much ketamine. On October 6th, Kenneth asked again for more ketamine. Salvador went to Matthew's home and sold him 1 or more vials of the drug. Next day, October 7th, Kenneth asked Salvador if they could pay with, quote, "something besides cash because it's hard to get to the bank on the fly with all that's going on, which happens so fast now."
Yeah, I can't even imagine trying to keep up with the amount of cash that they were handing out.
The bank?
Yeah.
And would be like, what are you
tens
doing?
Tens of thousands of dollars pretty much every single day.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy that I don't know how they were going about with the money, but it's crazy the banker just didn't get flagged at all. I guess he doesn't have anyone managing his money, because I feel like a lot of celebrities with a lot of money have like someone. But I guess you could just be like, fuck off, mind your business.
I wonder what else they were wanting to pay with. Like, what else would the doc... Obviously, cash is what they accepted because you can't trace it. Like, you know, bank transfers.
Yeah, maybe he meant, like, Venmo. Do you guys take Venmo? So on Sunday, October 8th, the next day, Kenneth and Salvador met at a Santa Monica shopping plaza, and Kenneth paid $6,000 cash for 4 ketamine vials. One vial of ketamine costs around $12, so they were paying a huge premium. Like, I was going to say, I feel like that, I don't know how much it costs, like, on the streets, but I feel like that is way more than it probably costs.
I feel like they were absolutely taking advantage of him because they knew how much money he had. That's even, like, with
that he was an addict.
Yeah, how much will this moron pay? Like, if it was someone else who didn't have as much money, I'm sure they would have lowered the price, you know, still to be a lot, but not as much as what he was paying.
Yeah, I definitely think that was the whole premise of basically they knew he was an addict. They kept getting him addicted and kept charging him an obscene amount of money. On Tuesday, October 10th, so 2 days now from the last day, Kenneth drove Matthew to a public parking lot in Long Beach where they met up with Salvador. And Salvador injected Matthew as he sat in the car and he sold more of the drugs to him. Kenneth contacted Eric on this day. Eric's the friend.
Eric's the friend, yeah. So basically they decide, I think, that they don't really, like, this is me reading between the lines. They decided that they could probably get more and probably cheaper from Eric if he had a connection. So the doctors are charging him the highest rate, and Eric, and they obviously have probably a limit as to how much they can get without raising suspicion. So I feel like that's why they got in touch with Eric.
Yeah. So Kenneth, the assistant, contacts friend Eric. One text read, "Hey, Eric, Alfred here, Batman's butler. He said I can text you directly. How much do you want per bottle, and what is the nice tip you want?"
I found that text interesting just quickly because Matthew Perry posted a lot on Instagram in the days before he died, and he called himself Matman. So, like, I don't even really, like, I don't know how it didn't raise suspicion that he was using again, because they were crazy posts. So, but I just found that interesting because he calls himself Batman's butler, but then, and he was calling himself Matman at the time before he died. I just found that was an interesting point.
Yeah. I'm sure people were aware he was using again, but it seems like he has so many ups and downs in life that they were just like, oh, he's using again. So Eric replied that Jasveen, the ketamine queen, wanted $300 per vial and he wanted a $1,000 brokerage fee.
So that's so much cheaper too than what they were paying with the doctors.
On Wednesday, October 11th, so this is still just like a day, next day, maybe like 2 days in between. These are all consecutive days.
A lot happened in October basically. It just seemed to really, really ramp up and obviously resulted in his death. But yeah, every day in October this was happening.
Yeah, and spending thousands and thousands. So October 11th now, Eric messaged Kenneth and said that he could get ketamine from a woman that he knew, which was Jasveen. He said, "It's unmarked, but it's amazing. He take one and try it, and I have more if he likes." Eric told Kenneth that Jasveen only dealt, quote, with high-end celebrities. If it were not great stuff, she'd lose her business. So the next day, October 12th, Salvador went to Matthew's house. This is the doctor again. He was given $21,000 in cash. Some of it had been owed to him for previous purchases. He injected Matthew while he was there. Matthew froze up and his blood pressure spiked. Kenneth said that Salvador said, "Let's not do that again."
Someone messaged our Instagram and said that apparently Matthew was unconscious in the few days before his death. I couldn't find anything in the court documents. Like, obviously this kind of refers to it almost being something like that. But yeah, it seems like this was kind of a turning point where they were like, wow, this is what's happening.
Yeah, they're basically making him comatose, like a vegetable. The next day, so this is October 13th, Matthew got a sample of ketamine from Jasveen and tried it. He decided to purchase 25 vials of it at the cost of $5,500. Eric texted Kenneth and said, "Let me know how many and I'll confirm what she can get. But as of now, she said she can fill any order." And Eric dropped the vials to Matthew's home on October 14th. It's 25 vials. That's a lot for him because he was only getting a few at a time from the doctors. So a couple days go by. Sometime around October 20th, Matthew received his final legal ketamine treatment from his original doctor. So his real doctor, legit legal ketamine treatment on around October 20th. This info came from a woman close to him, and her name's been redacted. The woman said the previous doctor had treated Matthew with ketamine every other day. This info, it's a bit unclear, but it seems like Matthew and his team told the previous doctor that he had a new doctor. The new doctor said he was doing well and that his depression was being managed, so he no longer needed so many treatments. This woman would also tell police that she believed Matthew had been sober for 19 months and she'd seen no signs of a relapse. Because I guess if you're doing it through a doctor, they wouldn't count it as relapsing, is what they're saying.
Yeah, like it's controlled, I guess, and it's not so much an addiction, it's a treatment.
I'm kind of surprised, like, that they're willing to do that on people who were very openly addicted to drugs in the past. Because I know even from working at doctor's offices, if you're someone who's been addicted to painkillers and stuff in the past or drugs, they're more hesitant to give you painkillers and things like that. So the woman last spoke to Matthew around October 24th, and she told police that he seemed to be in good spirits. On October 25th, Kenneth asked Eric for another 25 vials of ketamine. So this is crazy, because when was the last 25?
October 13th. So 12 days, he's used 25 vials of ketamine.
He asked for another 25 vials of ketamine on the 25th. Eric met Matthew and was given $6,000 in cash. Eric then got the drug from Jasveen, and Jasveen told him that her own source is known as, quote, Master Chef. Kenneth gave Matthew at least 6 shots of ketamine, both on this day and the following day. I'm like, I guess he probably, like what you were saying, like he wasn't functioning. So I was about to be like, I don't even know how this guy's functioning. But I guess that was kind of, he wasn't. October 27th, Kenneth again injected Matthew with at least 6 shots of ketamine. As they'd been getting the drugs from Eric and Jasveen for a while, Salvador texted Kenneth to remind him that he had the drug also. He said, "Hi, I know you mentioned taking a break. I've been stocking up on the meanwhile. I'm not sure when you guys plan to resume, but in case it's when I'm out of town this weekend, I have left supplies with a nurse of mine," and followed up in a later message saying, "I can always let her know the plan. I will be back in town on Tuesday." A little desperate.
Guess they know they've lost their cash cow, or, you know, he was less interested in getting it.
Yeah, and it just also shows like their intentions.
Yeah, they're just preying on him. Mm-hmm. So Matthew's last day was Saturday, October 28th, 2023. In the month leading up to this date, it's all been compiled, and Matthew and Kenneth purchased $55,000 worth of ketamine.
Oh my God.
At around 8:30 a.m., under Matthew's direction, Kenneth gave him a ketamine injection. Kenneth would later tell investigators that around 11 a.m., Matthew played pickleball. So I remember when this all came out that he had passed, everyone's like, yeah, he played pickleball, he seemed fine. But apparently his story would later change. I don't know what to, but that this isn't totally verified that he did play pickleball, but that was what was reported at the time.
Yeah, I remember that.
At 12:45 p.m., Kenneth injected Matthew with ketamine again. He said that Matthew watched a movie after this. Just before 1:30, so not even an hour later, Kenneth injected Matthew again. Matthew allegedly said to him, "Shoot me up with a big one." Kenneth then left the property to run errands. He returned to the home at around 4 p.m. and he found Matthew face down in the jacuzzi. It's kind of eerie because Matthew's last Instagram post was him in the jacuzzi. It looks like nighttime, and it says, "Oh, so the warm water swirling around makes you feel good? I'm Matt Man." So it's kind of eerie that he ended up dying.
I wonder, like, is he even actually posting this stuff? Is he having Kenneth post it for him? I don't know. I'm shocked he didn't die sooner with the amount that he was doing.
Yeah. So Kenneth jumped in and pulled Matthew to the steps. He then called 911. Paramedics arrived within minutes and Matthew was declared dead. There's some photos of the house online. It's a very open backyard. Like, I remember at the time they obviously had like news helicopters flying over, and you can see the pool and jacuzzi. It's not like it was, you know, covered or anything. It was basically right out in the open in the backyard. Matthew's body was autopsied, and the Los Angeles Medical Examiner would later release information about his cause of death. They said that they determined the cause of death for 54-year-old actor Matthew Langford Perry as the acute effects of ketamine. Contributing factors in his death include drowning, coronary artery disease, and the effects of buprenorphine, which is used to treat opioid use disorder. The manner of death is accident. And they went on to give some information about what actually happened. They said on October 28th at approximately 1600 hours, Mr. Perry was found unresponsive in his pool at the residence. After 911 were called, paramedics responded and death was pronounced. And then just went on to say he was autopsied on October 29th. And that basically following the investigation, they knew that he got his last legal ketamine treatment was 1 or 1.5 weeks prior to his death. And they said the ketamine in his system at death could not be from that infusion therapy since ketamine's half-life is 3 to 4 hours or less. And the amount of ketamine that Matthew had in his system was the range used for general anesthesia during surgery, which is so crazy. Like there's, I'll just read out, I don't want anyone's eyes to glaze over, but basically it says that he had ketamine levels of 3,540 nanograms, I think, per milliliter. So 2 days after Matthew died, Eric reached out to Jazz Veen and asked her to call him. He said, got more info. I want to bounce ideas off you. I'm 90% sure everyone is protected. I never dealt with Matthew, only his assistant. So the assistant was the enabler. They are doing a 3-month tox screening. Does Kay stay in your system or is it immediately flushed out? So Matthew was buried on Friday, November 3rd, 2023 at the Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Los Angeles.
I may just sit here and have my cake all day. Just sit here in the hallway and eat my...
As fans celebrate the moments that made us laugh, over the weekend, an intimate and emotional farewell for Matthew Perry. Loved ones attended a private funeral Friday for the actor in Los Angeles, including all 5 of Perry's Friends co-stars, according to People magazine. The service took place at Forest Lawn Memorial Park, located less than a mile from Warner Brothers Studios, where Perry filmed the iconic sitcom and played the charmingly cheeky Chandler Bing.
Please, could she be more out of my league? Ross, back me up here.
He can never get a woman like that in a million years.
Thank you, buddy.
The show's 10 seasons are still in syndication and were reportedly bringing in significant residuals for Perry every year. Those payments will continue even after his death and will go to Perry's estate. Now, as fans pay tribute to his life and legacy, the actor's advocacy is in the spotlight.
Is if somebody comes up to me and says, I can't stop drinking, can you help me? I can say yes and follow up and do it. When I die, I don't want friends to be the first thing that's mentioned. I want that to be the first thing that's mentioned.
Perry's family hoping to make good on that wish by establishing the Matthew Perry Foundation to help others struggling with the disease of addiction, adding the effort will be guided by Perry's own words and experiences and driven by his passion for making a difference in as many lives as possible.
There were always rumors and speculation that there would be arrests made in this case, and these came in August 2024. The 5 that we've spoken about were arrested on August 15th. They were arrested over claims that they were part of a broad underground criminal network. Prosecutors said that the group preyed on Matthew's addiction issues. We learn more about a raid that had happened on Jazz Veen's house. It says, during the search, law enforcement seized significant quantities of illegal drugs, including 1,978 grams of orange pills that tested positive for methamphetamine, 79 bottles containing a clear liquid that tested positive for ketamine, and various other suspect narcotics. They also found a handgun, and it says that they identified Jazz Veen as a large volume drug dealer. They seized her cell phone, which had conversations related to selling pressed methamphetamine pills and ketamine. In one March text conversation about selling ketamine, she asked for a payment of 958.51. So I don't know if that's meant to be 958 or anyway, but anyway, whatever. She asked for payment to go to her PayPal and it says, I think you'll like these, but remember they're double strength. Video recovered from her phone also showed her cooking ketamine, so she's not smarter. She left a very wide open trail.
She was very much like into herself and thinking she wouldn't get caught and untouchable.
After Matthew died, Jazz Veen texted Eric and said, delete all our messages. So like, and even there's a screenshot of it. It says like she set the message to disappear in 1 hour and things like that. But it's funny that she thought that this is how you can just clear your messages and no one will ever find out.
Yeah.
So the DEA administrator, Anne Milgram, said, "We allege each of the defendants played a key role in his death by falsely prescribing, selling, or injecting the ketamine that caused Matthew Perry's tragic death." She said, "Matthew Perry's journey began with unscrupulous doctors who abused their position of trust because they saw him as a payday to street dealers who gave him ketamine in unmarked vials. As Matthew's ketamine addiction grew, he wanted more and he wanted it faster and cheaper. And that's how he ended up buying from street dealers." So in terms of the charges and possible jail time that each of the five will face, Salvador was arrested and charged with one count of conspiracy to distribute ketamine, seven counts of distribution of ketamine, and two counts of altering and falsifying documents or records related to the investigation. He faces a maximum sentence of 120 years in a federal prison. He pled not guilty and was released on a $100,000 bond. His attorney, Stefan Sack, said his only concern was to give the best medical treatment and to do no harm. Unfortunately, harm was done, but it was after his involvement. This is wild to me. The judge ruled that Salvador is allowed to keep practicing medicine while he's out on bond, but he must inform his patients that he has surrendered his DEA registration to prescribe controlled substances and that he is facing charges. The judge said that Salvador must post a sign at his clinic and have all patients sign a form confirming that they still agree to be treated with him. And Salvador asked, if a patient returns for a second time, do they need to sign the form again? And the judge said yes, and those forms must be dated. So basically, every single time a patient comes to his clinic, they need to fill out this paperwork saying they know what's going on and that they still agree to be treated by him.
Yeah, embarrassing.
His trial is currently set for October 8th this year. In terms of Jasmine, she's been charged with one count of conspiracy to distribute ketamine, one count of maintaining a drug-involved premises, one count of possession with intent to distribute meth, one count of possession with intent to distribute ketamine, and five counts of distribution of ketamine. She pled not guilty. She's been refused bond. They said that she was a flight risk because she has family in the UK and things like that, so she is still in jail. She faces a sentence of 10 years to life in prison. Her trial is due to start on October 15th this year. Jasveen's friends have – sorry, the page just moved up. Jasveen's friends have spoken to the media following her arrest, and it made me laugh because these are just such ridiculous, you know, comments. They're so vapid. It's just, you know. Her friend Clancy Carter said, "She's always in the nicest designer clothes and she has family that takes care of her. She's never been the type that needs money. She has property in the UK. She's always traveling and doing fun things with her family. I would never guess she would do something like this, but if they have evidence connected to her, I'm completely shocked." She also said Jasveen was uplifting, bubbly, and sweet and spiritual, but she said either way, someone innocent died, someone who needed proper attention and care, so it's concerning for sure. And this bit is, she goes, "She knows a lot of people in the industry. Her and I have been to the Golden Globes and the Oscars. There's a lot of celebrities she was mingling with." So
sometimes I wonder, I'm like, is it the interviewer asking them these dumb questions, or is she really just like throwing that in there? Like, "Oh, did you guys like hang out a lot? Do anything cool?" Like,
another friend of Jasveen's, Heather Pardew, said, "She's a friend of mine. I mean, at the end of the day, no one's forcing anyone to do drugs," which that's a lot of discussion about this, which we'll get into at the end. But that was her comment about Jasveen. So Kenneth, the assistant, admitted to injecting Matthew and pleaded guilty to one count of conspiracy to distribute ketamine causing death. He faces a possible sentence of 15 years in prison. Former federal prosecutor Mark Chutkow says that by pleading guilty, Kenneth has entered into a cooperating deal with federal prosecutors, and he's also the link to the other defendants, which means that Kenneth is potentially a valuable witness. So there is a lot of discussion about what actual jail time he will face because he's kind of cooperated and he's led them to the bigger fish. But he
does. Yeah, if I was him, I would turn on all of them.
Yeah, me too. He does still face a sentence of 15 years.
Especially after seeing that text of between them being like, he's the enabler. He's the one that's going to get in trouble.
So Mark, the second doctor, pled guilty to one count of conspiracy to distribute ketamine. He sold ketamine that he had previously obtained by writing a fraudulent prescription to Salvador, who then sold it to Kenneth. Mark also got additional ketamine from a wholesale distributor of controlled substances and falsified statements on forms. He said that the drug would not be sold to any third party or used for any other purpose. He faces a sentence of 10 years in prison. He's due to be arraigned soon on August 30th, 2024. So Eric pled guilty to one count of conspiracy to distribute ketamine and one count of distribution of ketamine resulting in death. Prosecutors say that he delivered 50 vials of ketamine to Matthew, and 25 of those were handed over 4 days before the death. He faces a sentence of 25 years in prison. Eric seems to be the one that there's the least information on. Even like there's his name seems to be spelled E-R-I-K, but some people spell it E-R-I-C. There's a ton of information on the other four, whereas Eric just kind of seems to be a bit more of, no, I don't want to say an enigma, but there's just way less information on him and, you know, his even his friendship with Matthew, there's not a whole bunch of information.
Yeah.
So I guess the main controversy in this case is about Kenneth and if he should really be actually facing 15 years in prison. We asked on our Instagram what people thought, and I'm just looking down. 77% of people said they thought that the sentence sounded fair, and that the other 23% said that he shouldn't be charged. So I don't know. I can see both sides of the story. Essentially, he'd been with Matthew for 25 years. He was doing what Matthew asked him, and, you know, he would never have thought probably that that would have resulted in death. Matthew over the years had been an addict of many different things and he'd always come through, but he did inject him. He is a, you know, he has control over his own life. He could have said no. He knew it was the wrong thing to do. So it's just an interesting discussion about his role. Everyone else, I feel like no one is really debating if they should be charged. Obviously, Jasmine should be, the doctor should be, but Kenneth is where most of the conversation is.
I'm also curious, like, what money was Kenneth making? Like, was Matthew Perry just paying him a lot of money? Was he getting a percent of something? Or was Matthew Perry just so out of it that Kenneth could, like, take money? Was some of the money for him? Because they haven't really said that specifically, where, like, what was his motive for doing this besides...
And, like, Kenneth lived with Matthew, they said, at least for, like, months before the death. So he lived with him, which makes me think that he was somewhat reliant on Matthew, at least for a place to live. You know, they'd been together in this kind of toxic up-and-down addiction relationship for years. I don't, like, we don't know anything about if Kenneth was also some type of addict or anything like that, but it wouldn't surprise me if they kind of had this self-reliance, you know, or reliance on each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, an interesting discussion. Some people are like, no way, he was just doing his job and he, you know, if he said
but
no,
still,
I'm not saying I agree with that, but like that's one side of the argument.
I just hate that argument because I'm like, if my boss told me to like do anything like this, I'd say no. Like you can say no. I get it's your job and your well-being, but at what cost are you going to sacrifice your entire life for what?
Yeah.
And especially the point that it got, if it was like once here, once there, it's still not the right thing to do. But the level that it got to, if he was ever his friend, he clearly, in my opinion, didn't care much for him if he was just feeding him ketamine like this. I mean, I understand addicts are difficult to be around, but that's why you have to leave. Like, you have to make if it's someone you care about, you have to make the choice that you're not going to enable them anymore. And I've been in that situation and it's hard. I know that. But this guy wasn't only like enabling him. He was like feeding it to him, I feel like, or just making it very easy for him.
I'm not excusing, you know, like if it was just, for example, if he said, can you get me some cocaine? I'm going to a party, you know, that type of thing, whatever. But the amount of ketamine that they were doing, he surely had to have known how dangerous this was.
Just because you said cocaine, it's also like different. I mean, I guess it shouldn't be, but cocaine, like you'd be snorting it yourself. Like this, he was being injected by other people. So it just seems even worse, you know?
The other thing I wonder is why Matthew couldn't inject himself. Maybe he just.
I was thinking that too.
Like I've just been Googling to see if there's any reason why he couldn't have injected himself. And there's articles about basically how when people do it, they take the wrong amount and all that. But it seems like it can be done. So it's just interesting.
Well, I wonder.
They paid the doctor to do it. Then Kenneth figured out and he said, you know, we found the sweet spot to inject him. So maybe he just – like it could have just been he didn't like to and he had enough money so he could pay other people to do it. But I'm just interested as to why he relied on other people to do it for him.
I wonder if the sweet spot was like somewhere that was hard for him to reach or something.
Maybe he could have injected in a weird spot or something. I don't know.
And I think I talked about in one of the last episodes where we briefly talked about this, how a lot of people are just being like, oh, you know, they only care about it when a high profile person dies, blah, 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 which, yeah, it's true. But I mean, I feel like it's a you got to take what you can get. Would it be great if every overdose death could be investigated and all the drug dealers would be arrested? Yeah, of course. But most police departments don't have the resources for that, unfortunately. Doesn't make it right, but I think it just, it is what it is, sadly. Hopefully more bigger operations will get taken down because it seems like they are the ones who distribute the most drugs anyways. But a lot of people online are talking about that. How, like, they only care when it's a celebrity, blah, blah, blah.
I feel like a lot of this too was just due to the actual amount that he was being supplied. It's not like he was given one vial and, one of drugs. And it was laced, let's just say laced with fentanyl or something like that. It's like that the amount that they were giving him indicates that someone had the capacity to supply or make that amount of ketamine. So to track down the source of that would be a big win, you would think, for the prosecutors.
Yeah, definitely. And especially since some of them were doctors and people forget that not only were they dealing the drugs illegally to begin with or prescribing them illegally to begin with, they were absolutely exploiting him and taking advantage of him to try to get the most money out of him as possible. And his assistant seemed to be complicit in that. Again, his assistant could be like, no, he was really mean. He was an addict. He was yelling at me. I was scared for my life. Maybe that'll be a different story then. Maybe if he flips on all of them and helps get them all like max sentences. But I'm still like, this was excessive, dude. It's not like you just did it one time and you were like, oh, I can never do it again. You did it pretty much every day for a month straight. And you're going back and forth with so much cash buying these drugs. Like, I don't know. Be interested to see what more comes out from his side.
Yeah. So all the court documents for all of the five arrested are online. A lot of them are the same because essentially like Eric and Jasmine were talking to each other. So their documents are kind of the same and Kenneth was talking to the doctor. So they're all kind of intertwined. There isn't much difference between the five documents, but they're all on the blog if you want to read them. And like there are a few other texts and things that we didn't mention, but what we've picked out today are kind of the main points and the main communications that ended up causing Matthew's death.
Yeah, and if there's anything else to add, I'll put in a clip or something here by the time this comes out. But otherwise, that's really it for this story so far, and that's it for this episode.
It does seem like they are planning to progress with the trials and the arraignments and things like that fairly quickly. I did see that they are skeptical that the October dates for Jasmine, and I believe it's one of the other doctors, Salvador, might not happen then. So, but anyway, they are apparently planning to do all this year, but we'll see what happens.
I feel like this is one of those cases that'll go on for years just because there's so many people. It's like medical stuff and seems like a lot to go through. But everything will be on the blog at truecrimesocietyblog.com if you want to read through any of it. Make sure you're following us on Instagram because if there's any other updates, we'll definitely be posting them there at True Crime Society. And if you want to follow our personal accounts, mine's stephsum_Olivia's TCS Olivia. And make sure you check out our Patreon if you want more content from us or if you want to listen without ads. On Patreon, we do every episode ad-free. We do an extra weekly bonus episode every week, so you'd get two episodes a week. The regular episode, it comes out a whole day earlier if you just feel like you have nothing to listen to on Wednesdays and you need something on a Wednesday, sign right up. All the usual stuff, leave us nice comments, nice reviews, 5 stars on Spotify, share the podcast to your Instagram stories or with a friend. It's all a big help to us and pretty easy things for you guys to do. So if you could do that, it'd be great. And that is it for this episode. Stay safe out there. Thank you guys for listening. Peace out.